Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Penske File. We are here ending Season 1 Let's Watch of Star Trek The Next Generation. That's right, we're up to Episode 26 of Season 1. This one's called The Neutral Zone. It aired way back on May 16th, 1988. It was directed by James L. Conway. Teleplay credit goes to Maurice Hurley, and the story credit goes to Deborah McIntyre and Mona Klee. This is the one where the Enterprise is called to go to the neutral zone to check out some disappearing star bases or something, and they run into the Romulans, and they also run into a bunch of cryogenically frozen humans from a couple hundred years prior. So for this one, we're going to be joined by Clay again, and we will get into the neutral zone right after this.
Commander, Data, return to the Enterprise immediately.
We have run into an unusual situation, sir. There are people on board. Frozen.
Frozen? How many?
Three. The vehicle has suffered severe damage. Most of her systems have failed.
Are you suggesting they be transferred to the Enterprise?
I do not believe we should leave them here, sir. With your permission, we will be returning with three containers.
Whatever you do, do it quickly.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Welcome to the final episode of this Season 1 Let's Watch a Star Trek. Not the final episode of the podcast, but certainly the final episode of the first season. So we're joined this time by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm on the highway to the neutral zone.
Exactly. This is I thought it was fitting after watching this one, because you've always brought up the fact that the first season has a problem with plots going on as you're on your way to something.
Yep, and I have some things to say about that.
Yeah. So, I barely remembered this show. I went into it watching it thinking that it was another episode. It's not the first time I've done that, but I remember another episode with Romulans much better than this one, and I don't remember much of all about what happened here. Mm-hmm. Did you know anything about it going in?
All I knew was that it was the season finale.
Yeah.
I think I may have read that is it the first time that the Romulans are seen on screen?
In The Next Generation, yes.
Yes, yeah, okay.
To tie into that point, I think this episode is a mess. It's horrible. And I mean, just, it's not even the biggest thing, but they do mention that this is the first appearance of the Romulans. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they have them talking about it, and Data's telling them we haven't seen them in 50 years since the Tomid incident happened, where like thousands of people died. Although this flies directly in the face of Angel One, which we watched when they were going to, the whole point driving that episode was that they were trying to get to the neutral zone.
Oh, right.
Because
right,
other ships were fighting with the Romulans.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, you kind of have this problem. And I have two little trivia bits that I wanted to tell you here.
Can I guess one of them?
Sure.
Was this episode heavily rewritten or criticized by Gene Roddenberry?
That's not anything that I saw.
Okay. Well, go on. I'll explain my thought process later.
Okay. So I guess I have three here. Two of them are kind of silly, and the third one maybe has more to do with what you were just talking about. So The first bit of trivia is that this story, the story credit, as I mentioned before the break, went to Deborah McIntyre and Mona Klee, not actually writers on the series. What they did was they wrote a fan fiction that this episode drew from for inspiration.
So this is the 50 Shades of Grey of Star Trek?
Of Star Trek, yeah. So what happened is these guys wrote a fan fiction. The producers bought it during the writer's strike of 88. And the head writer, Maurice Hurley, rewrote the script in a day. Or he wrote the script in a day.
Awesome.
So it continues. The writer's strike of 88 had a huge impact on Star Trek, obviously, for the first season anyway, because a lot of these shows are just rushed. And the other minor bit of information was there's a character who I forget what her name is, but she's played by Susan Sackett.
I believe that character is the weepy woman. Because there's one character. Is it the one of the defrozen people?
No, she's not.
Oh, okay. Because no. I was going to say the only female in this episode just cries about her dead husband.
There's so. Yeah, I didn't notice this until researching it later. But there must be a science officer in this episode that I don't remember. But she's played by Susan Sackett. Susan Sackett was the personal production assistant to Gene Roddenberry. She was also, according to her memoir, his lover for that 15-year period.
Ooh.
And her appearance on the show was because she won an office bet about weight loss. She lost she lost the most weight and was given an episode of the show. And I guess it goes to show because I don't remember her. I don't remember any female science officer being a part of this episode.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, whatever.
At least not one with lines, anyway.
So, anyway, the major point to tie in with you, the script was written in a day, and it certainly feels like it was written in a day.
Yeah.
It was also intended to be a two-parter, but they ran out of it. And I do get the sense that it should have been a two-parter, because absolutely nothing happens in this show.
Yes, nothing at all. the reason I said the thing earlier about Roddenberry having some input on this was... It felt like the worst episode of, you know, there are people, there's a lot of people who are really into Star Trek who get critical of the episodes that are too action-y.
Yeah.
This feels like the worst end of that spectrum, where the entire episode is just like, diplomacy discussions and disagreements about whether or not possession should be something that you strive for in life.
Yeah, it's like all foreplay, and they never get to any like actual excitement happening.
Right. I will tell you, when I watched it, I had to rewind it a bit at the beginning when they were giving you the breakdown about what the Enterprise was doing.
Yeah,
because. When they were talking about the floating space capsule thing, I thought Worf said it's headed for the cave of the Spider Sisters, and I was like, "All right, I am on board."
The greatest villains of Star Trek history, the Spider Sisters.
Unfortunately, not the case.
That intro too. I just wanted to mention. I watched it on Amazon, so it's sort of the Blu-ray resolution.
Right. Yeah, I watched that too. Yeah.
It actually looked pretty cool in the high def. It looks terrible in the original definition, but in high def, it looks pretty good.
The ship, the Enterprise looks fantastic. The other thing looks pretty good. To compare it, I just watched Escape from LA for the first time in, I don't know, since it came out on video 20 years ago. And this episode of Star Trek was made, I don't know, probably 15 years before that movie was.
Yeah.
Maybe about 10 years. And it has way better graphics than that movie. The graphics in Escape from LA look like a bad PC video game.
Yeah. No, I mean, they definitely put work into it. And the other probably the best part about this show is just technically, I really love the way the Romulan warbirds look.
Is that a new redesign for the show, right?
Yes. The original series Romulan ships did not look like that.
Yeah, they were more saucer-like.
They were just flatter. They sort of had the wing structure, but they didn't have that like arc to them where they're hollow in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks cool. It's a cool looking ship.
Yeah, it is.
And
it's the only gripe I would have is it seems a little. If I'm remembering my ships right, it seems a little close to the movie redesigns for the Klingon Birds of Prey.
Yes. There's an in-canon explanation for that.
Oh, there is. Yeah. All right.
In the original series, due to budget stuff, they had it's either one way or the other. They had, I can't remember which one, they either had a Klingon or Romulan using a ship that had previously been shown to be the other race.
Mm-hmm.
So they've written into the storyline that the as they mentioned in this episode, where the Khitomer massacre.
Right.
Was a betrayal of the Klingons by the Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
In canon, it's now accepted that they shared technology during that time period. So the ships kind of look the same.
Right.
And the Romulans had the Klingon bird of prey. I think they call it the Klingon bird of prey.
Mm-hmm.
So that explains why they look so similar, or at least, you know, retconning it into making sense.
Right.
So the two plot lines for this show are the
Garbage?
Garbage.
Were you going to say garbage?
They're both horrible. They both don't make any sense. And the first one is that the Enterprise is being beckoned to the neutral zone to deal with these disappearing colonies.
Two Federation outposts in Sector 30 have been destroyed. There's been no communication with Federation star bases in Sector 31 since stardate 41903.2.
Romulans.
That's the assumption.
There has been no direct contact with the Romulans since the Tomid incident.
Questions are, why now? What's their objective? For 50 years, there's barely a whisper out of them. And now, for no apparent reason, they seem to be back with a roar.
Everything we know about them is based on rumor or conjecture.
The strategic decision is to send one ship.
The Enterprise.
We could get out there and find ourselves greatly overmatched.
True enough. It's a gamble.
This first encounter, coming so suddenly after all this time, we have to assume it's a setup.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there for 1 second.
Yep.
Because I like that you said the first one and not plot line A, because I have no idea what the lead plot line of this episode was.
No.
Because they're both completely parallel. And mm-hmm. whereas in the other episodes we talked about this, it's clear that, it's very clear what the split is and what's getting more time.
Right.
This one is kind of up in the air.
Right.
Like what seems like should be the lead plot line ends up being the secondary plot line. Some, I don't know. It's very,
yeah,
very strange.
I'd argue that the Romulan neutral zone is the premier plot line, but much less happens in that storyline than what happens in the other storyline.
Right.
The other storyline involves, at the very start, they find this old cart or whatever the hell it is. It's like a satellite with frozen bodies on it from the mm-hmm. 21st century. And so, of course, they beam them on board and wake these people up. And right away, it's just so weird for a season finale. This has two things that are direct callbacks to the original series. The Balance of Terror episode where they introduce the Romulans is
right.
exactly how this one plays out.
I think that's why this episode disappointed me so much, because Balance of Terror is probably the best episode of Star Trek I've ever watched.
Yeah.
At least it's at least my favorite, because it really... I mean, I know it's just basically a World War II sub-battle, but that's what makes it great.
It is. I'd agree. I think it's the best original series show by far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is cool because, it's like you said, it's a sub-battle where they can't see each other.
Right.
You know, they're flying sonar quiet or whatever they want to call it. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it's really just the last 10 minutes where they have that, like, we can't see them. Their cloaking technology is improved.
Yep.
And, you know... Whatever. So that's the other callback. And then the other plot is just a ripoff of Khan's Space Seed, except with douchier people.
It's a really boring, redo of Space Seed.
Yep.
They
where instead of being warriors, these people are like bankers and drug-addled country musicians.
And one woman who just...
Who's a homemaker.
Yeah, whose husband couldn't deal with the fact that she had died. That's the other thing. So they revive them, but Crusher is like, no, all three of these people are dead.
Yep.
They died, but magically, without explanation, because we're in the 24th century, we have cured them and brought them back to life. Where was this technology 3 episodes ago when Tasha Yar got blasted in the face?
Yeah, or whatever. It's the same. And she's even going in depth on them. She's like, this guy was riddled with problems. He had like cancer all over the place. I fixed him up real nice, though. It's I don't know why they had to be dead. Couldn't they just be terminally ill or something, you know, and frozen? Like, why go through the whole thing of them being dead?
I'm sad that one of them wasn't Walt Disney.
Yeah, that's all I could think about, too. It's just Walt Disney's frozen head. We couldn't revive him, unfortunately. Mickey Mouse.
Walt Disney, Ted Williams, and Casey Kasem.
Yep. So I'd rather talk about the frozen humans. I think it's a much more interesting plot. The Romulan thing is really just they're going there the whole time. They show up at the end and they meet the Romulans, and the mm-hmm. Romulans give a very season one finale speech where they're like, "We're back, Enterprise."
That was so dumb.
And so I'd rather talk about the humans. And the human plot line is so flawed and stupid. I wrote down in big block caps for my notes, so much judgment.
Commander Data, return to the Enterprise immediately.
We have run into an unusual situation, sir. There are people on board. Frozen.
Frozen? How many?
Three. The vehicle has suffered severe damage. Most of her systems have failed.
Are you suggesting they be transferred to the Enterprise?
I do not believe we should leave them here, sir. With your permission, we will be returning with three containers.
Whatever you do, do it quickly.
Because I don't know what the point of bringing these people back was. Like, all they do is... And, okay, just to start it off, why... Even the way they bring them onto the ship makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Because Picard is off at a meeting or something.
Yep.
And so Data's like, Riker, can I go over and check out what's on the ship? And Riker goes, okay, but make sure you get back quick. Why is Riker so ambivalent towards this ship that is carrying cargo of frozen people? The whole time he's just like, well, you better get back before Captain Picard gets here. You better get back, Data. I didn't understand what his general like rush was with everything.
I honestly couldn't tell you.
And they played it off like Picard would not be interested in these three humans from 400 years ago. Like,
hey man, he's got bigger fish to fry, I guess. Because he's telling Geordi to fly to the neutral zone when you're not supposed to do that or some shit.
Yeah, and they questioned him, bring him back. But it also led to, I guess Picard has never told about this, which led to my favorite line of dialogue where Picard goes into sickbay for no reason, and Crusher goes, mm-hmm. Your people are here. He goes, what people? She goes, the people Commander Data brought over. They were frozen, and I thawed them. which is absurd.
Yeah.
And then we get into these three people lay down a thing. They revive them. And the rest of the episode is just spent assuming that everyone from the 21st century is a jackass.
Yep.
And the 21st century people are so great that they can just make moral judgments about their superiority to them for the entire episode.
And well, and it never changes either, because at the end of the episode, when more than one person on the bridge is trying to, you know, say, oh, maybe we should, you know, bring these people back to Earth ourselves. Picard's like, no, the history is stupid. We don't need to learn anything else from these people. Let's get them off the ship as quickly as possible.
Yeah, they need. They're like, it'll take them 6 months to get to Earth. He's like, well, they need time. They need to get used to this. And the writing for them is so poor. This guy wakes up 400 years in the future. I also like that they didn't tell them what year it was. That was like the fifth or sixth question that they asked. They're like, oh, where are we? He's like, you're on a spaceship. He's like, wow. And they go on, and he's like, oh, by the way, what year is it? You think that would be the first thing you tell them?
No, like, I was thinking that if I was in that situation where I don't know, I flipped into a coma and I woke up, and the first thing I saw was really strange looking humanoid people wearing very extravagant clothes. My very first question would be, what year is it? Or is it Mardi Gras?
Exactly. Yeah. Am I in New Orleans, or is it 2452? But it's just the characters are like just horrific. Like, this guy wakes up 300, 400 years in the future, and he's like, I need a Wall Street Journal and I need to call my bank. Those are the things that concern him when he's flying on a spaceship through the stars at a speed faster than light. This is his like priority that he needs to get through.
Well, clearly it's because the one note thing they gave him is that he cares about money and possessions.
Yes.
And wants to know whether or not he has enough money and interest to buy the ship.
This it's a compound, damn it. To be fair, I'd be pretty upset with it. I'd be like, where the fuck did my money go? What do you mean the bank doesn't exist anymore? And
The first scene he has with Picard, where Picard's like pissed off at this guy, and this guy is being very demanding of you know, whatever the hell he wants. I was really hoping Picard was going to totally dress him down and be like, "Listen, guy, money doesn't exist. All your lawyers are dead. everything that you cared for basically doesn't exist. So you may as well go back and be frozen for the next 400 years."
Yeah, he's like, "You want to sue me? Sue this!" And like grabs his balls in front of him and just walks out the door. But
now
it's like,
stay away from my goddamn comm unit. I have to fight an alien race.
Although it's interesting that in the future, people are just well-behaved because apparently you can just contact the captain willy-nilly. Like, you don't need...
Well, that was another thing I was going to mention was, I remember a handful of episodes ago, you were wondering about the inner workings of the badges in the communication system.
Mm-hmm.
Why... Basically, the only reason that they use that comm panel to talk to Picard is because of plot reasons.
Yes.
Like... Excuse me. Why don't they just use the communicators?
Yes.
There's no... Unless it's a ship-wide... Again, I don't know exactly how they work. unless it's a ship-wide call for Riker, because nobody knows where he is, and he's not answering his communicator on his chest or whatever.
Right, yep.
Why can't he just, you know, go chest-to-chest, do a, you know, chest bump with Riker?
Exactly. It's... just them contacting him, the whole plot thing here, it's absurd because the Enterprise is, you know, they're in the middle of having a discussion where everything in this episode is just problematic. But they're like, they're going through this whole like dog and pony show about how no one has seen the Romulans in 50 years.
Yeah.
Yet everyone is extremely willing to give an idea of why they're, you know, doing this. You know, Riker is like 100% sure that they're trying to trap them. You know, we better raise shields and everything. Everyone is 100% sure they know the motivations for this, based on nothing. Based on absolutely nothing.
Captain Picard?
This is Captain Picard. To whom am I speaking?
Ralph Offenhaus.
I need to talk to you.
What is going on here, number one? Did you give him permission to contact me?
Of course not. He must have seen me use the comm panel.
Listen, Mr. Offenhaus, we're in a very important conference right now.
I'm sick and tired of being put off by you and your staff. This is the worst-run ship I have ever been on.
You should take some lessons from the QE-2. Now that's an efficient operation.
Data, identify. What is a QE-2?
It was a passenger liner which mostly traveled Earth's Atlantic Ocean during the late 20th and early 21st centuries.
He's comparing the Enterprise to a cruise ship.
Captain Picard, I demand that you see me. I think I have been very, very patient. I demand a phone or a radio or whatever else you have. But frankly, enough is enough, especially under the circumstances and considering what I paid for this procedure. I must make contact with my lo-
I'm Captain Picard.
I was thinking this is the first episode where Deanna Troi really came across as like you know, like a stoner or something.
Yes,
where it's like
where we just look it up on your computer.
Yeah, no, but it was like because Picard's like Troi, I'm gonna need a full workup on the Romulans. Like, yeah, man, whatever, I'll get down. And then the information she brings back is like completely rudimentary. Like, clearly she was just reading it off of Wikipedia.
Yep. She, I just liked her. It was kind of when Picard asked her to do that, it was kind of a shitty response too. She's like, well, we haven't seen him, you know, in 50 years. I'll try to get something together, I guess. Like,
yeah.
It was just a very weird dress down of her. Although I had, I had an idea that I wish they had followed through with Troi, you know. Tell me what you think about this. It kind of would have been cool if Troi, in addition to being like this counselor empath, was also a species specialist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It gives her something to do.
Yeah, I feel like, don't quote me on this because I obviously am not as well versed in the series as I could be.
Mm-hmm.
Does Data not fill that role of like a bit? Is he usually the one that they go to for stuff like that?
He is, and I think it's unfortunate because he doesn't need to be doing that. I don't think it would make more, because Deanna could give information that Data would not be like aware of, you know, like the emotional aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would give her something to do instead of them constantly asking Data about what these species are up to.
Yeah, and then cutting away from Troi as she's very quickly putting out a joint.
Yes, exactly, rolling around. But yeah, and the rest of Troi's episode has just been showing this idiot woman how to use a computer to look up things.
Well, I mean, you know, 1987, those things didn't exist. I mean, what she basically, apparently, maybe she did look up what Romulans were on Wikipedia, because she basically used Google to find out what happened to this woman's family.
Yes.
Yep. Part of me was kind of hoping that in the Blu-ray, the Blu-ray remaster, they would put in her great-great-grandson's Facebook page.
It would have been a nice touch. Is MySpace or something just like horribly dated? Just wow, look at this.
It seems your great-great-grandson was in a shitty band.
It is a lot of inbreeding too, because apparently after generation after generation, he looks exactly like her.
Oh,
her
and she was totally down to find that dude and commit some incest.
Yes,
I think.
Yes. It's been far enough removed to where she can just hang out with him now.
So, but before we go any further, there's one thing I wanted to mention about the beginning of the plot with these characters.
Yep.
When they get to the ship, the satellite where these people are frozen, there's a very specific moment where they show
Worf walking into the door for no reason.
I also like that because they the one thing they got right about the future is that they've moved past the hard drive disk technology into what I can only assume is the Enterprise being a giant flying flash drive.
Yeah, well, what do they call it? The isolinear chips. That's what Wesley pulls out of the thing in the third episode. So that's what – I did like the callback to hard drive-based systems. It was kind of cute.
Right. But the other thing, when they're going through the isolation freezing chambers, they make a very clear stop at one that has nothing in it.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, okay, I've seen this before. Clearly one of them has gotten out.
Yes.
And will be whatever the antagonist is, even though I thought this episode was about, once again, fighting with the Romulans. But
we got better things to do.
It's like this time they finally made it to the fireworks store, but the fireworks store was closed because they have bugs that they have to air out or something.
That's right.
It seemed like a definite plot element drop that there was going to be something sinister about
these people.
About this setup with these people, and they never followed through with it.
No, that would have been too similar to Space Seed, probably. Mm. I don't know what happened to that empty tank. I also like that they made no effort to distinguish between the tube that worked and tube that didn't. You know, it looked exactly the same. It was just a horrible, rotten corpse inside one, and a perfectly normal person in another one.
Right.
It's just to go back to the just the weird, stupid plotting. So they're, you know, they're having this discussion, this war room discussion in Picard's Red Room, where they're dealing with the Romulan thing, and this douchebag from the past calls them over the comm. Purely for plot purposes, they have Picard go there. You know.
Right.
Like, why didn't they just be like, shut off the comm badge, get a security team in there to fuck that guy up, and have him stop calling me? Instead, in the middle of, this is like a pre-war situation that the ship is dealing with.
Right.
They have Picard go down personally and talk to these idiots who are demanding to see his bank information, and there's the country music star that Picard, that I love, the Crusher told him his body was so full of chemicals.
Yeah.
You know, implying he's a drug addict, and then Picard is just like, this sounds like a man who had nothing left to live for.
Yeah.
Just super judgy. Every episode, or every line they have is just so judgy.
I would have been totally on board with that character if the only thing they had him do was just every time they cut to him, he was sitting in front of the replicator just replicating shit. Because that's what I would do.
I know.
If you showed me there was a replicator that could replicate the best martini I've ever had in my life and a guitar,
yep.
I would be pushing the limits. Let's put it that way.
It's like naked woman too. But it's like the episode A makes no sense in reference to other episodes. Like you clearly, once you know it's fan fiction, it makes a lot more sense. Because they're acting like they haven't run into the Romulans. They replicate a martini for this guy, right, in front of all of them. And then he pulls out a guitar later, and the woman is like, where did you get that from? It's like, bitch, they're making shit out of thin air. Like, I can get anything that goes on. A guitar is not hard. Like, let me show you we're flying faster than the speed of light.
The other thing that stuck out to me, too, is the asshole guy constantly makes reference to thinking that, like, he's on a cruise ship or something.
Yeah.
I think Riker should have made it much clearer when he explained what ship they were on, that this is, like, a warship.
Yes.
Or, for lack of a better term, I don't know how they distinguish themselves without sounding like, you know, the army.
No, it's true. I mean, I think Starfleet goes to great lengths to not call themselves the military when they're clearly military. You know, they have military ranks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to tie into what you're saying, why don't they just tell these fucking people what's going on? They never tell them anything, and so they constantly are getting interrupted by them because they don't think anything important is happening.
Honestly, if it was me, I'd be like, listen, just show them the holodeck and just...
Just leave them be.
Yeah, wait until they scoop their brains up off the floor.
I mean, Picard was blown away by the holodeck, and he'd probably... I know. He'd been there, so these guys would be like, this is amazing. There's really not much else to say about their plot. It's incredibly stupid. It makes no sense in and out of the timeline of this show. So let's just jump ahead to the ending, which is probably the best part of the show, the last 5 minutes. But they run into the Romulans in the neutral zone. Both sides discover that the colonies on both sides of the neutral zone, so Romulan and Federation, have been destroyed.
Right.
And the Romulans... are just like, Romulans do the season-ending thing of, we're back, Enterprise, you better be ready.
Captain Picard, because your actions are those of a thoughtful man, I'll tell you this. Matters more urgent caused our absence. Now, witness the result. Outposts destroyed, expansion of the Federation everywhere. Yes. We have indeed been negligent, Captain. But no more.
Commander, we have made some progress here. Let's not ruin it with unnecessary posturing.
Your presence is not wanted. Do you understand my meaning, Captain? We are back.
I think our lives just became a lot more complicated.
That was so dumb.
And then they fly off. And then
we are back.
We are back.
Now, see you later.
They just slowly turn around and fly out of there.
Do you guys know how to get back onto the freeway?
This neutral zone is so wide. And the and then Picard gives his season finale speech and tells them to engage, and they warp off. And that's the end of the episode. Absolutely nothing is accomplished. The main takeaway here, what they were trying... Do you know what they were trying to do with the destroyed colonies?
I was just going to ask that. Are they implying the Borg?
They are.
Okay.
They're implying the Borg. Fortunately, they don't call it... They don't come to that conclusion. Because if they had, it would make the way that we encounter the Borg in the next season totally nonsensical.
Yeah.
Because this implies that the Borg are knocking at the door of the Federation, which seems to make very little sense.
Yeah.
But since the episode doesn't explicitly state that, I guess you can just assume that they never figure out what happened.
Mm. Yeah, once they started dropping that stuff in basically the interstellar... the interstellar equivalent of trying to figure out who keyed your car.
Yep.
I wish they had done more on the Romulan side. Like that element where they were starting to decloak, but it was just a fake out to see if the Enterprise was going to fire, and then they recloaked.
Yep.
And I was hoping that like it would end up that once they did decloak, the ship was like busted or something. Like clearly they had some sort of encounter where they got messed up.
Yeah, that would be better.
And, you know, like some sort of something a little bit more interesting than, hey, do you happen to know who's been taking my newspaper?
Instead of having the horribly obvious scene where the guy shows up and he apparently drops a bomb, he's like, they don't know either, Picard. They're trying to ask you if you know. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, is that seriously where this guy's...
That was the one point where I really wish that this show wasn't on television, because I was really, like, Picard should be like, get this motherfucker off of my bridge. Don't just bring him to the door and stand there and watch the screen. Get him off the goddamn bridge.
I'm the captain, goddammit. It's so obvious. It adds nothing, and it just makes Picard look like a jackass.
Riker, can you go take this guy back to the room and try not to hit on the woman, because you haven't yet for some reason?
I did. Riker, as always, is the crew member you'd send away if you need to ingratiate yourself with somebody. Because right. When the guy says his ex-wives, Riker just gives his little wry smile that is so fitting of Riker. But yeah, back to the end. It's just like, I don't know what the point of any of this was. Like, the guy did nothing that they brought on. The Romulans did nothing.
Yeah.
No one learns anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one piece that I did like was during, even though it was, you know, a little ham-fisted, was that first interaction with Picard and, you know, J. Fumpy Offenfluffer, yeah, or whatever his name
Uncle,
was.
Uncle Moneybucks. What is his name?
Yeah.
His name was Ralph Offenhouse.
Offenhouse.
Yep.
I liked bits of the conversation they were having where it was like a very literal. There are better ways they could have done this if the episode was just about these characters.
Yeah.
But they had a very literal discussion about the mindset of the future and the mindset of the past.
No, I totally agree. That was actually, I think, is it the scene where Picard goes down to their quarters for no reason and it's the very end before he leaves?
I think so.
That was probably the best part of the whole show, and it's good because I don't even remember his argument, but the guy from the past actually had a good argument as to what's the motivation here.
Right, right.
You know, which is interesting. It's such a minor part of the show that it's like it's startling that that's the one good part, but there is a lot. You know, I never really, it might just be me getting older now, but the Starfleet future is like, it's distinctly Marxist. You know, because the whole, you know, like one of the tenets of Marxism is just sort of everyone should be trying to get leisure time, because leisure time is how you improve as like an artist or like a thinker or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all this future is about. And I think it's just me getting old enough to realize it, but it's like, you know, there's probably people who fought in the Cold War who are like potentially upset by this turn that Star Trek is taking in the future.
Yeah, like it made me start thinking about what life is like if you are not on a starship. So, and all I can think of is that, well, it's kind of, yeah, Marxist and a bit communist in that, or social, I never remember what the distinction
is. Yeah.
But that direction in that, I'm thinking, all right, well, he's kind of right. Like, what's the point of doing anything? And I'm thinking, well, the point of doing anything is just to work for the betterment of things and to move things along.
Yep.
So, but you're not getting paid anything. So you're just a cog in the machine of life now,
which is
even seemingly even more depressing than it was before.
No, that's true. And it's like,
what's the class system on Earth?
Right. But it's weird. You know, I could understand this if they were like trying to go for the betterment of humankind, but every other human that we run into is like, I'm a miner. I fucking mine shit. It's like, that's what you've chosen to do with your life. Like, in a world where you can basically, they're saying you can do whatever you want to become a better person. So many people are doing like geographic or geological studies. It's like, really? This is what they're getting out of?
Everybody is majoring in philosophy.
There's so many farmers and miners in the future. Mm-hmm. It's like, is this really how society is going to, like, when everyone has carte blanche about what they want to do with their life, this is what they do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I never really thought about it much before. And once I started thinking about it, I think I realized that I always just assumed that everybody was in Starfleet.
Right.
And which is even more interesting a concept in terms of, you know, oh, we're not a warlike people anymore. We are just a planet of military now.
Right.
But it's like I never really thought about what everybody else does, because I feel like you don't really ever get a I must not have watched many of the episodes where they run into people who are miners and farmers, but it always seemed like you never get an idea you never interact with anybody else who is just not who is not part of Starfleet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel it happens pretty frequently. I feel like they probably run into non-Starfleet more than they run into Starfleet people.
Oh, okay.
Because Homesoil, you watched Homesoil, right?
Yes.
I feel like that. I don't think those people I don't think they're Starfleet. I feel like they're miners who are doing something.
That's a good point. Yep.
So, yeah, it's just weird. And the only other thing I wanted to mention about the end is that for Big Trek fans, Mark Alamo is T'Bok, one of the Romulans. And Alamo would go on to become Gul Dukat in Deep Space Nine. So that's a pretty huge role in that series.
I am disappointed that Chief Engineer Johnny S. Longcock didn't make his appearance.
I know. I was hoping he would chime in. Because I think they go to Warp 8 at some point in this episode. That's way too fast for Leland T. Lynch.
Hey, not if you've personally rubbed down the dilithium crystals with your own hands.
He hand-cranked them. Oh, my God. I wish he was...
I would just love if there was a scene where, you know, the engine room is actually run like a Model T, where you have to put the thing in the front and actually crank it up before it starts to, like, sputter to life.
Yeah, or like the dilithium crystal chamber, like, it opens like an old-timey coal shoveling stove, and he sticks his shovel in a big pile of dilithium crystals and throws it into the warp core.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm shocked by this episode, just because things are going so well, and this episode is a huge step back in terms of the progress of the series. I'm going to blame most of that on the writer's strike, because this script is ridiculous. Did you have any thoughts about this as a season ender?
It might be the worst season finale I've ever watched.
Yeah.
Just because I was watching it with my girlfriend, and when it was over, I can't remember exactly what she asked me, but I said that was the season finale, and she just grimaced. Like, and it really did crystallize that problem I've had with the early episodes with the A plot and the B plot. The A plot ending up being something that you never see, but sounding way more interesting than what they end up focusing on.
Yeah.
And even, you know, it doesn't give one a lot of hope if the one time you see the thing that they're showing in this more attractive A plot is just as boring as the B plot.
Yeah. Where they actually get there and it all amounts to a hill of beans, basically, as Humphrey Bogart would say.
I think there could have been a good episode in here.
Yep.
Like I said, if they had eliminated or at least pushed the Romulan stuff back further, like if this wasn't a season finale and this was just the regular a regular episode, and they did do what I don't like, which is pushing the Romulan stuff to the back and really focused on more of the personal changes that these people who have been thawed out have to go through, that could have been interesting. And if they were given more time and it wasn't so on the nose with the way they handled it, and if there was some sort of I don't know, conflict or any other basic storytelling technique that one would use to tell a story.
Yeah, you'd think you'd want some conflict. I mean, I just really honestly thought about this, but I mean, you know, there's a episode much later where they find Scotty and he's been trapped in a transporter and he's now in the future with them and he's out of place. Mm-hmm. Why did they have to go so far back with these frozen people? Say these frozen people were cryogenically frozen from, like, Kirk's time. Mm. And they're woken up in this Romulan era. And they know how bad the Romulans are because they're from the original series.
Oh, yeah.
But the whole change here is that this Romulan Federation, like, loose alliance is the change, you know? And they're having problems with it. But it's sort of it's setting up the show to be, like, we're different from the original series. Like, things are changing. You know, much as the changes that come from waking up 100 years in the future can be, there are also changes between the species of the universe.
Right.
It's like anything like that, instead of just some bullshit about this guy's like, where's all the fucking money? And then Romulans being like, hey guys, welcome to our world. And then getting out of there.
I mean, even the fact that if you do that and you go back to someone from Kirk's time, the first thing that they see when they wake up is a Klingon on the ship.
Exactly. Yep.
You know,
yep.
And which would be instantly alarming.
Yep.
And gives you a lot more to deal with. I don't know. I guess the effort was put into showing the difference between the way we were at the time when it was written and the way the future is going to be.
If you want it to be.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it just doesn't. It just didn't work.
No, it's
they didn't approach it the right way.
It's a bad episode. So
yeah.
we're gonna wrap it up. I give this a 1 out of 5 on my ranking system. This is probably one of the worst episodes of the first season. And it's weird because they're now getting to a point where I can't obviously tell they're bad just by sort of looking at it, if you know what I mean. Like the early first season episodes I could tell were bad because the dialogue was horrible and they looked bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're sort of getting more comfortable with the production side of it. So mm-hmm. you really have to sort of, you don't have to pay attention. Like, it's obvious this is a bad episode, but they're getting better at making the bad episodes look good, even though they're still bad, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the other thing that happened that I did like was Worf gets a little fiery at the end when he starts talking about the Romulans.
Yes.
And that seems to be the most when that happened, I was like, oh yeah, that's Worf. That's what Worf does.
Right.
Whereas, as you mentioned in the past, he's pretty docile up to this point.
Yes. And it's also because you watched Code of Honor with me.
Yes.
I don't think they mentioned that did they mention that the Romulans did that?
I don't think so.
I don't remember it. If they did,
I could be wrong, but I don't remember that. Don't remember. Them
yeah,
that.
I can't say it either way. But they're explicit in this episode, almost on the nose about like what the problem is with Worf and the Romulans, which is good, which is what the character needs.
I can't remember if we talked about this last time. Do you think Worf did the Klingon death yell when Tasha Yar died?
He best have if not if just done it in the quiet solitude of his own room.
Captain, these are Romulans. They are without honor. They killed my parents in an attack on Kinemar when they were supposed to be our allies. They believe humans and Klingons are a waste of skin.
Lieutenant, control your emotions. Please open hailing frequencies.
So let's go with some real TV criticism here. There's only two. Keith D. Candido for Tor.com felt that the episode did not really work, saying that the, quote, smug moralizing with regard to the 320th century refugees is laid on too thick, and that the appearance of the Romulans tried too hard to be reminiscent of their first appearance in Balance of Terror. Overall, he said that the first season ends not with a bang, but with a whimper. I'd agree with that, I think.
Nothing. Yeah, it's not really much else to say.
Yeah.
That pretty much sums it up.
The AV Club wrote that the previous episode, Conspiracy, would have served better as the ending to the first season than The Neutral Zone. The Neutral Zone wasn't the worst so far, but it may possibly be the most frustrating because of the two storylines. Mm. He felt that the Romulan plot would have been sufficient alone and described the storyline featuring the cryogenic survivors as extremely painful comic relief. He gave it a C-.
Yeah, so that's interesting that they say if the Romulan thing had been the entire episode. The thing that I've noticed about this first season is it kind of feels – it's almost like they don't understand editing. And I don't mean like within the show. It's like – excuse me. If the Enterprise is going from point A to point – ooh. Jesus. If the Enterprise is, I almost knocked my water. If the Enterprise is going from point A to point B.
Knocked my bong over. listen. Go ahead.
Hey, man. Let me tell you about what's going to happen in the future, but what happened in the past is the important thing. If the Enterprise is going from point A to point B, have they ever just said warp 8 towards whatever we're doing, engage, and then do like a cut to good, we've arrived, now we can actually deal with this.
It's always
like it's going to take us 5 days to get there. Well, we may as well show you in real time what happens in 5 days on a ship.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like the science of it is more accurate in the early season, but the cold open eventually just becomes, here's the problem, let's go there, act break, okay, we're there. You know, like
right,
and it's much better narratively than non-narratively. It's also there's this Mission Log podcast I listen to. Mm-hmm. It's probably the most professional of the Star Trek podcasts.
I just started listening to that too. I like it. It's pretty good.
I like them. I tend to strongly disagree with. I don't know what their they're associated with the Roddenberry Company. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I'm getting a super impartial look at the show all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they were they started at the Nerdist, I think.
Oh, did they?
And I think they must have got, I don't know the specifics, but yeah, the early, very early episodes have the Nerdist intro.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they got, like, you know, folded into the Roddenberry thing. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, so I don't know how impartial they are, but they are definitely providing the most information about the show outside of that. And it's just, they have these things called discovered documents where they have, like, memos and stuff. And the main things I've gleaned from that is that Bob Justman, whoever he is, he's a producer on the show, seems to be the only person who is bringing up the problems that weren't getting fixed. And also, they spent a huge amount of time and effort on the science of the show.
Mm.
And it's like, guys, have you read some of these scripts? Like, there are huge narrative problems. I don't give a fuck if Warp 8 is too fast to be realistic. It's like... What are you talking about? Like, I know you're paying this team of probably like grad student physicists who are note checking for you.
Yeah.
But it's like, this seems to be the wrong focus. How about we get some scripts in here that actually make sense and we can just put whatever science in afterwards.
So Christopher Nolan would have really appreciated the early episodes of the show.
Yeah, he would have appreciated its hyper-realistic take on spacefaring travel or whatever. Oh boy!
Except again, they leave out the idea that once you start traveling faster than light, you age faster. So I wish the end of this entire show was they go back to Earth and realize it's 700 years in the future.
I was thinking about that, and I'm now that I've been thinking about it, I wonder if there's a in canon explanation about that's why they always talk about warp bubbles. Because there's an episode where Crusher is stuck in a warp bubble. And I don't know if the warp bubble is what sort of you create a pocket of the universe inside the warp travel. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
So that when you come out of it, you're in the bubble that was the universe when you started.
Right. Okay. I see what you're saying.
It is a good question. I don't know if they ever bring it up, but I was thinking about that because I watched a couple of episodes recently where they're like the warp bubble. And they constantly harp on about the warp bubble.
Yeah, not to get too nerdy, but, too late. But I'm surprised they didn't just say, like, we just travel through wormholes. Or, you know, something where it's like, it takes some of the physics that would
be problematic.
Throw those problems in, and eliminates them. But, you know, whatever, who cares?
Exactly. And I think that pretty much sums up the season finale that we just watched. Who cares? But that's the end of the first season. So thank you, everybody, for listening all the way through. It only gets better from here on out, but a little bit disappointing ending, I guess, as D. Candido said, not with a bang, but with a whimper. But
now, did they know, I don't know if there's any way to know this, but the hints that they were dropping about the Borg in this episode, was the Borg something they had already pinned down as a concept?
Yep.
Okay, so...
What they became. They had a different idea.
Oh, really?
The conspiracy aliens were going to be the Borg. The Borg were going to be Insectoid.
Oh.
And that was eventually dropped, and they became...
But the idea of generally what they are and what they do
even know if they are all about assimilation. They might just be sort of like terrifying, powerful bad guys. I don't think they had worked out the assimilation thing. Because even in the first Borg episode, they haven't quite nailed down what the Borg want from people.
Oh, right. Except more spandex for their unitards.
They want tubes and spandex. but we'll get into that. The Borg make their appearance. Q returns. All that happens in season two. And my next episode is going to be a recap of season one. I'll probably do it by myself. I'm going to give the top five, bottom five episodes... general thoughts, opinions about what happened. So that'll probably go up the day after this one as a little bonus. So thank you, Clay, for joining. You're probably the veteran of the first season.
Oh, I'm enjoying it. It's I like going back to watch these episodes because I haven't watched them in a long time, and it's a lot of fun to talk about.
Yeah, they're very sort of easy to come away with an opinion on, you know, as you can plug, you're doing a Prisoner podcast, which is a little bit more difficult to sort of come up with a theme sometimes where the Star Trek is very broad. So it's easy to approach. But yeah, Clay has a Prisoner podcast. You can listen to that. You want to plug all the information?
Sure. You can listen to the podcast at backinthevillage.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast and email us at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com. And Wes is cool enough to do it with me.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Which I appreciate.
It's a lot of good stuff. You guys should check it out. Check out the show. Check out the podcast. And for me, you can go to thepenskypodcast.com to get all these episodes. You can also go to my YouTube channel, which is The Penske File. That's got everything. And you can listen on iTunes. Just search for The Penske File. And as always, if you listen, it's much appreciated if you could leave a like or a review on YouTube, or a like or a review and a like or whatever on iTunes. Much appreciated. Helps me get up in the rankings a little bit. So thank you guys for listening to the first season. And I will wrap it up with the next episode. And after that, I'll be back with my cast of companions here, and we will start season 2 right after that. So thanks again, Clay.
Thank you.
And we will see you guys later.